Last Sunday, we noticed a lesson on marriage and the home. Again, this morning, we'll be noticing another lesson on it. We noticed last week things that cause a marriage to erode, to decompose. And we noticed that for the wife, Simon Peter lists six things that are ingredients to a successful marriage, which, if they are ignored, cause a marriage to erode. A marriage erodes whenever the wife fails to be submissive, respectful, chaste, modest, and of a gentle and quiet spirit. And a marriage erodes likewise when the husband fails to live considerately with his wife, to live protectively with her, and to live jointly with her. Either failure, or the failure on the part of either of these partners in these ways, will cause a marriage to erode. Today, I want us to notice the rebuilding of a marriage. And lest you think that I'm not talking to you today by saying, well, our marriage is still together, so the lesson today isn't for me, may I urge you to be aware of the fact that it is for you and it's for me too. Someone said, you must have extrasensory perception. You hit me every time you get in the pulpit. And I said, no, I just preach on my own needs, and it usually turns out to be your needs too. So that's why I'm preaching today on this subject from this particular viewpoint. I need the things said just as much as you do. Sometimes marriages become stale and stagnant. And it may be that though your marriage is still holding together, it may be that it needs a breath of fresh air. It may be that it needs a renovating. I was talking with a man overseas some years ago, and I don't know how the subject came up, but somewhere along the line, he made this statement about his marriage. He said, oh, we're at the chalk and cheese stage. The chalk and cheese stage. Well, I never had heard it put like that. But what he was saying was that they were at the bah stage in their marriage. You know, take a bit or give a bit. It didn't really matter one way or the other. And it was very tasteless. And at the very best, it was something perhaps like cheese that maybe sticks in the roof of your mouth. I'm not quite sure what he had in mind. But the way that he said it, it communicated to me that his marriage needed a breath of fresh air. Perhaps yours does today also. We want to use the chart that is so much in evidence before us today. Brother Joe, I want to apologize for it being up while you were teaching your class. That's terrible to erect something like this and expect a man to teach a class in front of it. It even intimidates me, and I'm going to be preaching on it. Ken Klein does such a beautiful job with these charts, and he painted this one here. And I want to express appreciation to him today. You know, we're all desirous of having meaningful family relationships. This is what was determined by a recent survey. We all want meaningful family relationships. We all want meaningful relationships in general. We would like, each one of us, would like to have meaningful friendships. We would like to have meaningful partnerships. We would like to have meaningful everything in the way of our associations with people. We would like for it to be meaningful. We would like for those relationships to be deep. We would like for them to be rewarding, whether it's a friend or a son or a daughter or a wife or a husband. What we really want out of our associations is genuine and deep and rewarding relationships. But so often, instead of arriving at this point here in our relationships, all we do is find ourselves locked into just acquaintances. And a good friend of mine advised me before the service that this word is misspelled, the I is left out of it. It wasn't done intentionally, but since you left a letter out of it, Ken, I'm glad you left the word, the I, out, because that's what's usually missing, or the proper relationship of it's missing. In most acquaintances, it's the I that needs to be adjusted and fixed, either put in or taken out, one. But The word is misspelled for the benefit of those of you who noticed it. I looked right at it and didn't see it. But we would like to have this over here. But actually, we find ourselves only having this, acquaintances. And so many people find themselves living in a community with merely acquaintances. They have no friends. I spoke with a man that had lived in this community for 25 years, and he said he had no friends. Plenty of acquaintances, but no friends. And how easy it is for a person to find himself living in a community and yet being alone, or find himself being in a large crowd, but terribly lonely. And how easy it is to find ourselves living in a marriage relationship and yet, in fact, being very single, not really being one with the other person, not being joined to them meaningfully. So many times we wake up after 6 or 7 years, or maybe after 25 years, and we look over at the person in bed with us and we see that there's a person in that body. And we've not really seen the person before, and maybe having seen him, we don't like him, or having seen her, we don't really like her. But nevertheless, we're locked into that acquaintanceship that has never really and truly become meaningful. And in your marriage, the butterflies may have all gotten in formation. You know, at first they just fly in every direction, and it's such a wonderful feeling, and the stomach is all churning, and the blood pressure is high. That's what happens when people at first fall in love and find themselves enjoying the blessings of a fresh new marriage. But after so many months or so many years, those butterflies at least start flying in order. They're not all that exuberant. They're still flapping along, most of them, but they're not doing all that much to you. Or it may be that the butterflies have actually retrogressed back into the form of the caterpillar from whence they came. You may have gotten back into that where when you look over there, you don't feel any butterflies. You feel this terribly fuzzy thing crawling all over you, and it just gives you the willies. Is that where your marriage is? A lot of people feel that way, and they say to their mate, "Don't touch me. I don't want you to touch me. Don't. You give me the willies. I don't like you." And so we find ourselves so many times locked into acquaintances and yet never really and truly coming to be a part of a loveship, is what I've defined it as. Partnership, friendship, whatever. But it's love that we really and truly want. But without going through a certain route, we'll never get there. The thing that's missing in those acquaintances that never become love, whether it's friends or partners or wife or whatever, that which is missing is this central circle here, that of quality time. Quality time. And that means that you spend time in depth, that you spend time intimately with people, that you spend time meaningfully with them. Now, that means more than just talking about the weather. You'll never have a friend by just passing the time of day about the weather. You'll never have a real friend by just passing the time of day talking about fishing or the ball game of the day. You'll never have a real friend by passing the time of day with small talk. Neither will you ever develop a wife into a real, genuine partner, nor will your marriage ever develop into a real, solid, rewarding partnership if you just pass your years, which come and go so quickly, in small talk, things that are not challenging, things that are not really and truly depth-finding and rewarding. Unless we're willing to spend quality time together as husbands and wives, our marriages are going to continue to deteriorate. Incidentally, if all we men do is spend time with our wives physically, if that's where your interest and my interest lies exclusively, you know, the wife gets the impression that we really don't care for her if that's where our interest lies exclusively. If the only time we show real interest in her is when we want her physically, she gets the distinct impression that you really don't care about her. There must be quality time spent with her emotionally. There must be quality time spent with her socially. There must be quality time spent with her mentally or intellectually. These various areas of a person involve the wholeness of the personality. They involve the person, not just the body. And there is definitely more to a person than just his or her body. So men, may I urge you, let's all make sure that we reaffirm our wives' worth to us as we spend quality time with her intellectually, emotionally, socially, as well as physically. And then you wives, may I urge you to reaffirm your love and your care for your husbands in ways that are other than just physical ways. But your way of physical contact or your physical expression differs somewhat from the husband's. If your husband gets the impression that about all you care about him is that he gives you financial security, that he brings home the bacon, if that's about all that you give the impression that you're concerned about, and that you don't really care about being with him emotionally or spiritually or intellectually or socially, if you give him that impression that about all you're concerned with is his bringing home the food and providing you with the financial security that you need, then he gets the distinct impression about you that you don't really care for him. And unless we can break loose from these strangulation type misconceptions of our marriages, then we're going to continue to watch them erode and deteriorate. But the thing of all of these that's the most important is the one that I've listed last. Unless a family, unless a marriage can be built upon a solid spiritual foundation, you're not going to have much of a basis for oneness. I've said often, and I'd like to say it again, that one cannot be one with another one with whom he is not able to be one at the center of his being. Let me say that again. One cannot really be one with another one with whom he cannot be one at the center of his being. That's why the Apostle Paul wrote and said, "Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. For what fellowship does righteousness have with iniquity? What concord does Christ have with Belial? Or what is there in common between light and darkness? What agreement has a temple of God with idols? For we, that is the Christians, we are the temple of the living God. As God said, I will live in them and move among them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people." A person who is not one with the person with whom he lives at the center of his being, and that is at the point where God is the very focal point of our existence, you can't really and truly be one with that person who does not share that focal point in his life. And that's why Paul urged, don't marry an unbeliever. Don't become mated with someone who does not share with you the same convictions that you share about God and about Jesus Christ. For what communion is there between these opposite polarities? What fellowship is there between light and darkness? What common ground is there between Christ and Belial? And so he forces us to this conclusion that one cannot really and truly be one with another one with whom he cannot be one at the center of his being. So I would like to urge you, make sure that that is true in your life. If you're simply an acquaintance with your husband or with your wife, living under the same roof but never really and truly coming to know that person, either because you've never spent quality time in intellectual matters or social affairs or emotionally or physically perhaps or spiritually, if it doesn't bring into focus all of these attributes and aspects rather of a person's personality, you're not really one with that person. While you're young, you may be able to survive it, but as we grow older, the heart yearns for oneness with someone else. When a woman grows older, when she comes to be about 40, 45, There's a craving in her to be one with someone who loves her and protects her and lives considerately with her. There's a craving there, which if we as husbands deprive her of, we rob her of her gift of life. I think that's part of what Simon Peter meant when he said that we ought to live considerately with our wives, bestowing honor on the woman as the weaker sex, since you are joint heirs of the gift of life. Maybe that has reference to eternal life. I'm sure it has. But I'm also suspecting that it has to do with just the fact that she's a joint heir with you and me. She's a joint heir with you, a joint heir of the gift of life itself. In other words, what makes us think as men that we have no responsibility toward our wives to provide them with the very basics of life that they have a right to enjoy simply by the very fact that they themselves are people? What right do we think that we can deprive them of the one small span of this life that they have a right to as a human being? They are joint heirs of this life. They are joint heirs of eternal life. But the emphasis here is upon joint. Joint. And it's the word, as we noticed last Sunday, that comes, it's the word soon, the prefix. And from it we get the word symphony, to play together in harmony. And I'm confident that that's part of the Christian life, that we absolutely owe our wives, and wives that you absolutely owe your husbands. All right. In order to rebuild a marriage, both partners must seek the mind of Christ. Now, you can maintain a maintenance program. One partner can maintain a repair program, a patch-up program, where you hold this ship together that is trying to break up. One partner can do a pretty good job there. But if you're interested in rebuilding a marriage, then it's going to take both partners working at it, trying to establish and maintain the mind of Christ as the rationale for that relationship. Now, I know, as Edith Schaefer said in her little booklet on the home, she says at each point in life, somebody has to do more than the other to make a relationship work between two people or within a family group. She says at least one person in a relationship must take the initiative to solve a communication problem. That's true. There must be at all times one person or the other who is more concerned at that particular point and who is more involved in an initiation way to initiate. One person will usually at one time or other be more involved in it than the other. The other person will at that time be the reciprocator. But if you're going to rebuild a marriage, eventually it comes down to the fact that both people must be involved in that job. In the book, or the article, Marriage as It Was Meant to Be by Lloyd Ogilvie, listen to this statement. The miracle of a Christian marriage occurs when two minds seek the mind of Christ. Thought patterns, values, preconceptions, and expectations can be unified only as we seek to know and express His mind for us. Another word used to translate Paul's Philippian term, the mind of Christ, is the word disposition. Disposition. This is thought in personality expression. What is your disposition in your marriage? May I say that your disposition in your marriage is precisely nothing more nor less than your thought in a personality expression. Are you just terrible to get along with in the family? Then you're a hellion inside. That's right. If in your personality, in your family, if there is where they see you as an obnoxious, cantankerous, ill-tempered, so-and-so that cannot be gotten along with at all, you can just mark it down. You're a child of the devil. You've never seen Jesus Christ. Now, that may you think be too strong, but let me just tell you this, that it is in these dispositional displays, when we are at home, where people see us as we are, without the facades, that's where the real self begins to emerge. That's where the dominant character in our personality begins to become visible. And he goes on to say this: our disposition in marriage is radically altered when it is shaped around Christ's person, purpose, and power. An emotionally loving Christian who has experienced the healing of his memories and has actually felt the penetration of Christ's love can express warmth with the gift of his emotions. Then when the will is liberated to deliberately seek Christ's will with a mate, God can unite two people in profound closeness as fellow adventurers in the new life. Marriage and the family become expressions of the kingdom of God. His rule within, between, and amongst. And that's a good statement. It takes two minds seeking the mind of Christ, determined to establish the mind of Christ as the atmosphere in which the marriage is contained and within which it finds its expression and upon which it finds its basis and out of which it finds its activities and its actions. It's this two minds seeking the mind of Christ. And how many of you, in trying to get your mates to go to the marriage enrichment seminar, you find yourself tugging and wanting this, and you find the mate, other mate, saying, oh, no, I don't want that. And it happens both husbands and wives. I've had husbands tell me, I wanted my wife to go, and she won't go. I had a young girl tell me on campus the other day, I wanted my husband to go, and he won't go. Well, it takes two to tango. It takes two to preserve a marriage. And it takes two people seeking the mind of Christ if we're going to reestablish and reconstruct and rebuild a marriage that has become stale. It takes both of us. Listen to this mind of Christ as Simon Peter mentions it in verses 8 and 9 of chapter 3. Finally, after he got through talking to the husbands and the wives in particular, listen as he portrays the mind of Jesus. Finally, all of you have unity of spirit, sympathy, love of the brethren, or love of each other, love of your mate. Listen, a tender heart, a humble mind. Do not return evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, bless. For to this you've been called, that you may obtain a blessing. Listen to a further definition of the mind of Christ, and you're familiar with it. It's the Beatitudes. Jesus said, blessed are the poor in spirit. And I want us to translate these, as we've done some years ago or some time ago. I want us to translate them into marriage language with one brief statement. Blessed are the poor in spirit translates, I was wrong. Can you say that to your mate? Blessed are they that mourn translates into, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Have you ever said you were sorry to your wife or to your husband? Have you ever said you were wrong to your wife or to your husband? Have you said it lately? Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are they that mourn. Blessed are the meek. Translates, let me do what's best for you. Blessed are they that hunger and thirst after righteousness. Translates, let's do what's right regardless. Blessed are the merciful. Translates, I forgive you. Blessed are the pure in heart, translates, I trust you completely. Blessed are the peacemakers, translates, I'll absorb it this time. You've had a bad day. I'll not retaliate. I'll make allowance for your bad day today. Can you do this? Can you say this? This is the mind of Christ. Blessed are the persecuted, really was the translation that I gave just then. Blessed are the peacemakers is, let me be the first one to make up. Let me go to you. Let me initiate the reconciliation. This is the mind of Christ. And if we can each, as partners in a marriage, enjoy the benefit of having this mind of Christ, and that's not very difficult. What I've read is not difficult to understand. It's difficult to implement, but it's not difficult to understand. And so it does not lie in the realm of the nebulous, to where we don't know what we're supposed to do. Rubbish. We do know what we're supposed to do. It's purely out of sheer rebellion, not only out of rebellion against our wife or our husband, but it's a sheer rebellion against God for the Christian to be unwilling to say, I was wrong, I'm sorry, forgive me, let's do what's right regardless, let's do what's best for you, I forgive you. Let me be the one to initiate reconciliation. It's sheer rebellion for any Christian to refuse to say these things and mean these things in order to reestablish and reaffirm a marriage relationship. And to stand back on what we think are our rights, to stand back on what we think are our possession as a husband, as a man, or to stand back in what you think is your power position as a wife, and refuse to lay down your life for the benefit of your mate, is rebellion not only against the mate, it's rebellion against God. And we'll all give an answer for it if we choose to go that route. All right, how can we then do this? How can we then reestablish the mind of Christ as the atmosphere in which we live? I'd like to suggest that there is a key to reconstruction. There's a key to rebuilding. It's two-sided. One of these is honesty. Honesty. And somebody says, you know, I am very bluntly honest. If I can say one thing about myself, I am very honest. Oh, that's not what I'm talking about honesty. I'm not talking about your ability or your willingness to state in a very clear and concise and cutting manner what you think is wrong with your mate. That's not the kind of honesty that's necessary. The kind of honesty that I'm referring to is the kind of honesty that doesn't just tell the truth, it is open to the truth. It is open to what the truth can do. It is open to your own failure to measure up to the truth. It's expressed in the prayer by the psalmist in Psalm 139, verses 23 and 24. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. And see if there is some evil way in me, and lead me in the path everlasting. That's the kind of honesty that I'm talking about. I think that's what Simon Peter had in mind when he said there in the text that we read a moment ago, be of a gentle mind. Listen, be of a tender heart and a humble mind. A tender heart is a person who is truthful with himself. He's honest. A humble heart, a humble mind, a tender heart that can be approached, a tender heart that can be touched, a tender heart that can acknowledge that he's been wrong if he's been wrong. That's what I'm referring to about honesty. That's one side of this key to reconstruction. The other side is vulnerability. Vulnerability. That means that you simply leave yourself open to be hurt. And I'm convinced that there is no greater key to a reconstruction of a marriage or the building of a relationship than to leave yourself open to be hurt. Listen to what Simon Peter says. Do not return evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, bless. For to this you've been called, that you may obtain a blessing. He's talking here about leaving yourself open to be hurt. And that just simply means that you confess to your mate what you've acknowledged before God. You've left yourself open to God. You've spent time in prayer and introspection. You've prayed, please let me know what's wrong with me. That's being honest before God. Now, to be vulnerable to your mate just simply means, by the way, that you confess this to your mate. And you find yourself saying to her, I am pig-headed. Please, I'm pig-headed. Forgive me. It's hard to cut a man to pieces when he admits that he is pig-headed. It's hard to say, yes, you are, and then just stand there and slash him to death. That's very difficult for a woman to do. And even if she does it, you just simply say, that's right, please forgive me. And let her get it out if you want to rebuild your marriage. I'm convinced that no meaningful relationship can ever be established until both parties in the relationship leave themselves open to be hurt. Until both members of the relationship or both partners leave themselves open to be made to look like a fool. But in our preoccupation to be cool, we erect these barriers and don't let anybody get into us. But if you're going to reconstruct your marriage, if you're going to learn how to put into effect the mind of Jesus Christ, you're going to have to be deadly honest. And we're going to have to be absolutely vulnerable. I'm convinced that whenever we lay down our lives, we will resurrect our marriages. And not until then. Until the husband is willing to just simply lay down his life for the wife. And until the wife is willing to just lay down her life for the husband. This is all you'll ever have. You'll live under the same roof with a stranger for the rest of your life. Both of you living in your little cocoons. Both living in your isolation shells. Touching at random, but never ever really joining. I said last Sunday that times of stress come into marriages, and out of those times of stress there grow beautiful marriages. Louine and I went through one 20 years ago, and it was this rebellious spirit that I referred to, not hers, mine. It was mine. I never had really and truly given myself to that little girl, never had. I had my little world over here, and I took care of that, and I provided it with money, and I had boats and motors and playthings and toys, you know, and all this over here, and I gave her a dollar or two a week. What should she expect, you know? That ought to satisfy her. Some spending money, she usually had to take that out of the grocery money. Pompous idiot. Surely men ought to be able to see themselves better than that. Well, Jesus mentioned it when he said, if any man would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. He was talking about marriages here. If any man wants to be a successful in his marriage, if he wants to be a successful husband, if any woman wants to be a successful wife, let her deny herself. Let him deny himself. Let her take up her cross. Let him take up his cross. And let them both follow me. For whoever would save his life shall lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake shall find it, whether it be in a marriage or in a business partnership or in the relationship between a father and a son or a mother and a daughter. Jesus said you've got to deny yourself. Otherwise, there can't be any reconstruction. There won't be any implementing of the mind of Christ. Now let me say one thing as I close. I want to ask you a question. Last week I gave us a test. Today I want to ask us this question. And it might very well open the windows on a stale, stagnant marriage that could very well be the revitalizing of it. Here's the question. If you loved Christ, now I'm speaking this to Christians because that's the majority, the vast majority of who's here today, and we are expected, that's our identity, loving Christ. If you loved Christ with all your heart, what are three things you would do to express his love to your mate? Now, if you get the question? If you loved Christ with all your heart, what are three things that you could do to express this love for Christ to your mate? And let me ask you just simply to do this because of the fact that you love Christ. You may have kind of grown out of love with him or her. You might have become infatuated or unimpressed by him or her. But because you love Christ, what are three things you'd do for that person to communicate his love for her? First of all, consider what your mate needs and wants. There's not a mate here today that does not know the crying, urgent need of our mate. If you don't know it, then it's because you haven't been communicating. If you don't know that there's something that your wife or your husband needs and wants, and for which her very being is crying out for satisfaction, then for goodness sakes, go home and sit down and talk. Get into some of this quality time with her and let her express what she needs and what she wants. But I suspect the majority of us, if we'll be real shrewd and if we'll be real downright honest, we'll know full well three things that she wants of me. And it may not be anything more than fixing the roof or the ceiling of the bathroom. That's on a list, and I'm working toward it. I'm talking about just simple things like that. It may be that she just simply wants some of your time, to where she's not just a wart on the body of your relationship, and that about whom you become concerned only whenever out of disregard you hit her and she hurts so that she just bleeds. It may be something else. But what are three things that you could do for your mate? Now, I'm going to ask you to do this then. For 30 days, do specifically and precisely those three things that you know your wife or your husband needs and wants. For 30 days, do it. And I dare you to do it with the intention in mind, I'm doing this because I love you in a genuine sense. I love our marriage. I want it to grow and prosper. I don't want us to go on estranged. I dare you. And it may not be anything more than letting her have a chocolate sundae every day for a month. And she may gain 40 pounds. But you do that for a month. If she wants it, you let her know, by the way, that you love her that much and you're that interested in the marriage that you have being the full realization of the gift of life that God has granted both of you. And then watch what happens. Here's a statement made that in this context, this man Ogilvy says, in this context, two bodies can be given in unreserved sexual freedom to satisfy, enjoy, and delight each other as gifts of God. That's what Paul Tournier calls total marriage, and what one of T.S. Eliot's characters tried to express by saying to his mate, the new person, us. Us. You can rebuild your marriage if you will. And you can make it literally a heaven on earth. Brother and sister Merritt, last week, someone told me that as I gave the test last week, you're either closer together today or you're farther apart in your marriage. They told us that Brother and sister Merritt, when they stood up after the service, took a hold of one another and looked in each other's eyes. And after about, I don't know how many years of marriage, but they knew they had found it. Have you found it? You can. You can rebuild it. By seeking the mind of Christ, both of you, by spending quality time together in that pursuit, you can find it and you can build it and you can make it real. And it's the finest thing on God's earth. May God grant us this great acquisition. May it be a reality in your life and mine. We're going to sing a song of invitation. You may want to come forward. You may want to come and ask for counseling from the elders on your marriage. It may be that you just want to come and make sure that you get a place on this marriage enrichment seminar. If you want to respond for any cause, having any need that the elders of this congregation can provide or that we as members can supply, we urge you to come while we stand and sing.